Okay, back again to read Hitler's War by David Irving. This chapter is called Axis. Hitler's initial instinct was to send paratroops to Rome, flush out the monarchy, the traitors, and the Vatican, and restore the wronged dictator to power. As July 26, 1943 dawned, he even sent out orders for his troops to abandon Sicily forthwith, leaving their tanks and equipment where they were. For between Sicily and the Brenner Pass, there were virtually no German troops at all. 1,000 miles of Italian coastline along which the enemy might at any moment land and be positively welcomed by the new regime in Rome. Were he in Churchill's shoes, he would have struck at once to reap such a rich reward. Yet as the days passed and more moderate advisers came to the Wolf's Lair, reason prevailed. Now time worked in Hitler's favor. Throughout August, the Wehrmacht foothold in Italy was steadily strengthened, in spite of Badoglio's protests. A brilliant rearguard action was fought in Sicily after all, and when in September Badoglio and his generals finally fulfilled the Führer's gloomiest predictions and hoisted the long-prepared white flag of surrender, Hitler was ready to step in. The stenographic records show how effectively he could grapple with major crises. Sepp Dietrich's SS Lifeguard Division must be rushed from the Eastern Front to Italy at once. The 70,000 German troops in Sicily must be brought back to the mainland, abandoning their heavy equipment if need be. Quote, they can make short work of the Italians with pistols, too, end quote. There must be an evacuation of Sicily, quote, like Dunkirk, end quote, in 1940. The 3rd Panzer Grenadier Division must seize Rome, arrest the government, and kidnap the king, and above all, the Crown Prince, who would be retained as hostages to guarantee that Italy abide by her pact with Germany. Badoglio must be captured dead or alive. Mussolini must be found and rescued, if he had not already been put to death, in which case his body must be recovered, to prevent the enemy from putting it on display, and Rommel, quote, find out where Rommel is, end quote. At 11:15 p.m., on July 25th, the OKW telephoned the Field Marshal in Salonika to return to the Führer's headquarters at once. From all over Germany, they flew into the Wolf's Lair. Himmler, Guderian, Goebbels, Goering, Speer was already there. Ribbentrop, convalescing from a lung ailment, arrived looking pale and drawn. Donitz decided to come with several of his staff. Schmunt was ordered back from leave. What disturbed all the party leaders most was this vivid proof that dictatorships could be toppled with such ease. As Jodl bluntly put it, ruminating out loud to Hitler, quote, the fact is, the whole fascist movement went pop like a soap bubble, end quote. Hitler directed Himmler to ensure that nothing went pop in Germany. That Mussolini, a leader bound to him by destiny, should have been so ignobly deposed by traitors and vassals of the monarchy made his blood boil. Hitler did not doubt that Badoglio was already working hand in glove with the enemy. Quote, we can be clear on one score. Traitors that they are, they will of course proclaim their intention of continuing the fight. Of course, but it will be a betrayal. End quote. He smiled contemptuously. Quote, we shall be playing the same game, leading them on until we suddenly drop like lightning on the whole bag of them and round up the entire gang. End quote. On July 26th, he sent Captain Wolf Jung to Kesselring with oral orders to stand by to seize Rome and prevent the Italian fleet's escape. Hitler instructed the 2nd Paratroop Division to fly to an airport outside Rome the next day without advance warning to either Kesselring or the Italians. The 3rd Panzer Grenadier Division was also to move to the outskirts of the capital. In the tea house of the Wolf's Lair, Himmler had lined up a dozen Luftwaffe and Army special agents as candidates for the job of rescuing the mislaid fascist dictator, now known to have been arrested on the king's orders on leaving the palace. Otto Gunsche, Hitler's bodyguard, took them into the Führer's study. Hitler asked each in turn, quote, what do you think of the Italians? End quote. The last of them, a burly, scar-faced Waffen-SS Sturmbannführer, captain, growled, quote, what a question, mein Führer, and me, an Austrian, end quote. Hitler picked this man, Otto Skorzeny. Skorzeny would leave with General Student for Rome next morning. The latter parted from Hitler with the words, quote, A tough but particularly rewarding mission, mein Führer. End quote. Scorsese was a badass. Worn out that evening, Hitler ate alone. No less than 35 people packed the following war conference. Two factions were clearly crystallizing. The one, led by Dönitz and Jodl, decried precipitate action against Italy. The other, led by Hitler, wanted students' paratroops to pounce. Rommel wanted the whole operation adequately thought out, but Goebbels felt that the British would hardly wait a week while Rommel was doing his thinking. Goering had already stated his opinion at midday. Quote, "Our opponents will obviously scream to the Allies for help and beg for protection," end quote. Hitler pointed out, quote, "but it will still take them some time to get ready to invade," end quote. At first, the British would be nonplussed. They always were. Everybody, particularly Goebbels and Ribbentrop, opposed Hitler's plan to sweep through the Vatican as well. Quote, "apologies afterward," end quote, would never repair the harm this would do to Germany's image abroad. Meanwhile, Kesselring and Richthofen insisted from their Italian headquarters that Badoglio would stay loyal to the Axis cause. Badoglio had received Kesselring that evening. Quote, "You see, Field Marshal," the new Italian leader explained disarmingly, "this is the problem that gives me sleepless nights. How to lead a defeated army on to victory," end quote. Kesselring reported innocently that Badoglio had only replaced Mussolini to provide the strong war leadership needed to restore honor to Italian arms. Hitler could only chuckle at Kesselring's gullibility. Militarily, Hitler knew he could not defend the entire Italian mainland once Badoglio defected. Quote, "In the course of events, we shall obviously have to fall back along here somewhere," he said on July 25th, tapping the map of Italy. "That is quite plain," end quote. In addition to the divisions he was already moving into northern Italy from southern France, he wanted three SS armored divisions taken out of Manstein's army group south. The SS divisions were most politically akin to fascism. Their transfer would in turn necessitate withdrawing the German salient at Orel to release divisions for Manstein. Kluge, brought before Hitler on the 26th, was aghast. Quote, "Mein Führer, I'm bound to point out that there is nothing we can release at this moment. That is quite out of the question at present," end quote. Only when his army group had fallen back on the new Hagen line along the Dnieper could he offer any help. But construction of this sector of the East Wall had only just begun and would not be ready for occupation before September. Hitler feared that Badoglio would have defected long before then. Quote, "September is quite impossible, Field Marshal," he retorted, and angrily commented, "the swine on the other side shovel out a line in 2 days, and we can't throw them out. Can't throw them out." End quote. The next evening, Field Marshal von Richthofen arrived from Rome. The war conference lasted until nearly midnight. Quote, "Everybody very rude about Kesselring," wrote Richthofen. "I counterattack. Some of his dispatches are admittedly psychologically tactless, but by and large objective and accurate. I identify myself with them. Rommel knows nothing, but thank God says nothing, and is just reveling in feelings of revenge against the Italians, whom he hates. Dönitz is moderate and sensible. Everybody else, especially Ribbentrop, just repeating whatever the Führer says." End quote. Richthofen did predict that Marshal Badoglio might raise impossible military demands and use their non-fulfillment as a pretext to deal with the enemy. Almost on cue, Ambassador Mackensen's telegram arrived from Rome, announcing just such Italian demands. Richthofen urged Hitler to appear to accept everything in order to win time to infiltrate Rommel's divisions into Italy. Hitler's big worry, however, was that in silent agreement with Badoglio, the British would suddenly arrive by air and sea in Italy. On this score, Richthofen had to agree. Hitler ordered, quote, "student is to fulfill his mission as soon as possible," end quote. It was at this moment that a blustering speech by Churchill rescued Hitler from his dilemma. Speaking in the House of Commons in London, he said that nothing short of, quote, "wholesale unconditional surrender," end quote, would prevent Italy from being, quote, "seared and scarred and blackened from one end to the other," end quote. Quote, "we should let the Italians, to use a homely phrase, stew in their own juice for a bit," end quote. Now Hitler knew he would have time after all.
A message was sent to Kesselring reminding him not to let General Student unleash Operation Black, his plan to occupy Rome, quote, through any misunderstanding, end quote. An immensely self-satisfied Führer joined his field marshals for lunch that day, July 28th. By evening, his mind was made up against precipitate action. Despite the curiously reassuring appreciations of Admiral Canaris's Abwehr, Hitler had more than enough evidence of Badoglio's stealthy and treacherous maneuvers. Through the SS-fostered, quote, Post Office Research Institute, unquote, Hitler obtained on July 29th the transcript of a radio telephone conversation held soon after midnight between Churchill and Roosevelt. They had gossiped about the, quote, imminent armistice with Italy, unquote, in language that told Hitler that Roosevelt was at least was in secret contact with King Victor Emmanuel, but that many days would pass before Italy would defect, because the first terms of the armistice would have to be thrashed out, and Churchill wanted to prevent the 60,000 British prisoners in Italy from being shipped to Hunland, as he called Germanly. Hunland. On July 30th, Rommel's army group reported that the Italian defenses along the Brenner were being stealthily reinforced and demolition charges laid. Canaris's intelligence agencies played all this down. When it was learned that Commando Supremo had burnt its secret files 2 days before the Duce's overthrow, Colonel Alexis von Rona, chief of Zietzler's intelligence section, Foreign Armies West, swore that this did not indicate that treason was in the air. At the beginning of August, Canaris came to Hitler's headquarters and reported on a meeting he had just had with General Ame, his Italian opposite number. The Abwehr chief blandly assured Keitel that Badoglio was resolved to fight on. Quote, there is no question of any peace negotiations. And there's an asterisk relating to that, also end quote. General Ame later reminisced that Canaris met him in Venice on July 30th with the whispered congratulation, quote, we hope our July 25th will also come soon, end quote. Canaris begged Ame to do everything to prevent the entry of more German troops. The SS learned of this, but Hitler declined to unmask Canaris to Hitler at this stage. Both Canaris and Rona were later hanged for treason. And back up. During August, the discrepancy between these assignments by Canaris and Rona on the one hand, and those by the SS, the Foreign Ministry, the Forschungsamt, and the frontier Gauleiters in Austria on the other, grew so wide that the German Admiralty raised a scandalized comment in its war diary. At talks with Keitel and Ribbentrop in Treviso on August 6th, General Ambrosio again assured the Germans that Italy, quote, wanted to fight on at Germany's side, end quote. But his lack of interest in securing more German arms and material told Ribbentrop all he needed to know. Yep, actions speak. He telephoned Hitler immediately. This was, quote, treason, 100%, end quote. Under the new code word Axis, previously Alaric, Hitler's planning for the occupation of Italy and the seizure of her idle fleet at La Spezia would continue throughout August 1943. Mussolini had still not been found by the Führer's agents. All that was known was that he was still alive, because Hitler's 60th birthday gift to him, a 24-volume set of Nietzsche, was duly acknowledged by the deposed dictator. Meanwhile, the hunt for his place of imprisonment went on. The Anglo-American air offensive had not lessened. After the first big Hamburg raid, Hitler had greedily signed Albert Speer's draft decree for the mass production of the Army's A-4 rocket missile, the later V-2 to bombard London that autumn. Heedless of the effect on the Luftwaffe's aircraft industry, he had on July 25th ordered all available skilled labor, raw materials, machine tools, and electric power devoted on high priority to the rocket missile. Quote, you can only smash terror with counter-terror, he reiterated that day. Otherwise, the time will come when the people here just lose faith completely in the Luftwaffe, end quote. But the anti-aircraft gunners and fighter pilots were now fighting with their radars, blinded by the Allied electronic countermeasures. During the nights that followed, Hamburg suffered three more catastrophic RAF attacks.
In one, an immense firestorm began, the huge fires creating hurricane-strength winds that sucked trees, rooftops, debris, and people into their flames. The tens of thousands sheltering in the massive concrete bunkers were incinerated alive. Nearly 50,000 people were killed in this one city, Hamburg, during this last July week of terror in 1943. On August 1st, Speer dismally predicted to Hitler that if 6 more cities were given the same treatment, the war would be over. Hitler ordered the women and children moved out of the Reich capital at once. Under the determined command of its Gauleiter Dr. Goebbels, Berlin was evacuated of 1 million civilians in grim anticipation of the raids to come. On August 13th, the American bombing of Wiener Neustadt resulted in a 4-hour row between Hitler and Jeschenik. 4 days later, the Americans bombed the ball bearing works at Schweinfurt and Messerschmitt's plant at Regensburg. That night, the British saturated Pinamonte with bombs, killing 700 of their best missile scientists and slave laborers. Jeschenik committed suicide, shooting himself the next morning, and Milch at last persuaded his successor, General Gunther Korten, to transfer fighter squadrons back to the defense of the Reich. Reichsmarschall Goering presented Korten to Hitler on August 20th, on the same day Hitler discussed with Dr. Ley and leading architects how to provide for the bombed-out families. Ley offered to build 350,000 homes a year, but Speer interrupted, quote, "I will not provide the materials because I cannot," quote, end quote. Hitler would not hear of that. Quote, "I need 1 million new homes," he said, "and fast, each about 10 feet by 12. It is immaterial whether they are of wood, concrete, or prefabricated slabs. I am even thinking in terms of mud huts, or at worst just holes in the ground, simply covered over with planks. The houses should be built singly in individual plots around towns and villages where possible scattered about among trees." End quote. These houses would have no lavatory or gas, water, or electricity, just the barest essentials in the form that even old women or children could easily erect, for their menfolk were at the front. 2 benches, a table, a cupboard, and nails to hang their clothes on. Quote, "We are forced to build as spartanly as possible, so there must be no distinction between them. The main thing is for these people to have a roof over their heads when winter comes, otherwise they will perish." End quote. Himmler, eager to expand his own empire, offered to Speer concentration camp labor to build missile factories and to man the assembly lines. He also offered him the use of the SS proving ground at Blizna, Poland, for the rocket launching trials. Hitler ordered Speer and the SS chief to make the maximum use of caves, tunnels, and bunkers for what all three evidently considered a significant element of Germany's coming strategy, namely rocket missile retaliation against England. The German people must at all costs stand fast during the trying months to come, until the fighter and anti-aircraft defenses mastered the bombing terror, until the missile attack on London could begin, and until the monolithic Anglo-American and Soviet facade began to crack. Hitler believed that the evidence justified his expectations that one day the Western Allies would turn against Moscow. The first straw in the wind had been the creation of a puppet Polish committee in Moscow. In July 1943, Stalin had followed with a, quote, "Free Germany," unquote, committee consisting of exiled communists and renegade generals captured at Stalingrad. Now it should at last dawn upon the British where Moscow proposed to lay the post-war boundaries of the Bolshevik Empire. Quote, "I fully recognize that at present a ruthless desire to destroy us is rampant in Britain and America," reflected Hitler. "But the British have got it all quite wrong. They declared war to preserve the, quote-unquote, balance of power in Europe. But now Russia has awakened and turned into a state of the highest technical and material caliber. This means that the onslaught from the East can in the future only be met by a united Europe under German leadership. That is in Britain's interest, too," end quote. It would soon be mid-August. Still, Hitler hesitated to order General Hube to evacuate his 60,000 troops from Sicily to the mainland. On the one hand, Admiral Dönitz protested about relinquishing Sicily to the enemy. On the other, General Jodl warned that the moment military operations were launched for the rescue of Mussolini or the seizure of Rome,
and the Italian fleet at La Spezia, the Italians would cut all the supply routes to Sicily, and the 60,000 men would be lost. Kesselring, Mackensen, and Rintelen all reported that Badoglio could be trusted. From his Gauleiter in the Tyrol, however, Hitler learned that the Italians had stealthily moved three divisions into Bolzano and Murano. Quote, "These steps were obviously taken," he realized, "to satisfy the Anglo-American requirement that Italy must take positive action against Germany if she is to get better peace terms." End quote. Hitler now told General Heinrich von Vietinghoff, whose new 10th Army would take over the two corps stationed in southern Italy, that he proposed to evacuate it eventually, and, quote, "would not be happy until all those divisions from southern Italy and Sicily were standing south of Rome," end quote. Quote, "Mussolini probably won't be coming back," wrote Rommel from his Munich headquarters. The fascist party was evidently very corrupt and was swept away in a matter of hours. On the other hand, it suits us well, as there is now only one great man to lead in Europe, end quote. Admiral Dönitz shared Rommel's sentiments about Hitler, writing after 48 hours at the Wolf's Lair, quote, "The enormous energy the Führer radiates, his unerring conviction, his prophetic analysis of the situation in Italy, all these have very much brought home to us these last few days what poor worms we all are in comparison to the Führer." End quote. Rommel flew up from Munich to the Wolf's Lair on August 11th. Quote, "Goering, Dönitz, Student, and Himmler are at the midday conference. Discussing Italy, the Führer agrees with my own views. Führer appears to intend sending me in quite soon. Like me, he doesn't believe in the honesty of the Italians. The Führer says the Italians are playing for time. Then they will defect. The Führer evidently wants to adhere to his old plan of restoring fascism to power, as this is the only way to guarantee that Italy will unconditionally stand by us. He has sharp words of condemnation for the work of Mackensen, Rintelen, and Kesselring, as they, and particularly Kesselring, still totally misinterpret the Italian situation and blindly trust the new regime. Lunch with the Führer. I sit on his left. A very spirited discussion with the Führer, evidently delighted I am there. Again and again, I find that he has complete confidence in me. Before supper, I confer with Jodl. His plan, based on our proposal, was for me to take command in Upper Italy. My new draft has me in command of all Italy, with two armies, north and south, while being myself under the Italians. The army group HQ near Rome, so as to exert influence over the Commando Supremo and the regime. After I refute his objections, Jodl agrees. Then supper with the Führer and evening conference. He approves my proposal to fight a delaying action in Sicily and to fall back on Italy only when forced to do so. And meanwhile, to establish four lines of resistance across the Italian peninsula, the first from Cosenza to Taranto, the second at Salerno, the third at Cassino, and the fourth and ultimate line along the Apennines. End quote. One last attempt was made to force the Italians to come clean about their intentions. Hitler ordered Rommel and Jodl to confront the Italians with a putative plan for a joint defense of Italy and to study their reactions. The meeting took place at Bologna on August 15th. General Roata took the news that Rommel would command all German forces north of Apennines very badly. He icily submitted a map which would, in effect, deploy the Italian divisions in a barrier across the peninsula, where they could trap the Germans in the south. The motive was clear. Rommel wrote a 20-page memorandum on the Bologna meeting. Jodl more succinctly cabled the OKW that evening, quote, "Grounds for suspicion remain undiminished," end quote. Hitler ordered the evacuation of Sicily to begin. One further episode illustrated Hitler's abysmal hatred of the Italian House of Savoy. He invited King Boris of Bulgaria to the Wolf's Lair for an informal visit. They lunched together for 3 hours on August 14th and again the next day. In the intervals, Boris amused himself with his hobby, clambering around a locomotive's footplate. Hitler's staff had thoughtfully provided one with steam ready raised in a nearby siding. According to Franz von Sonnleitner, Boris at last agreed to allow his intact divisions to be used against the Russians. Quote, "We were all very contented," wrote Sonnleitner, "when Boris left," end quote. Hitler himself accompanied the king to Rustenburg airfield. 2 weeks later, King Boris was struck down by a disease of mysterious suddenness. The German air attaché in Sofia provided immediate air transport for the king's German physician, Dr. Seitz, on August 24th. Seitz reported, however, that the king was dying. He provisionally diagnosed a bladder disease, and Hitler sent the Reich's finest doctor, Professor Hans Eppinger, from Vienna to assist. Complications set in, and the famous neurologist Professor Maximilian de Crinis was flown in from Berlin on the 28th. But at 4:20 p.m., the king died. The king's Italian wife, Giovanna, would not permit an autopsy, but Eppinger noticed that the royal corpse's lower extremities had turned black, a phenomenon he had seen only once before, after the Greek prime minister Ioannis Metaxas had swallowed poison on January 1941. Upon the German doctor's return, Hitler instructed his Minister of Justice to discharge them from their oath of secrecy and to question them. They were unanimous that the cause of death was an exotic snake poison. It was the characteristic quote-unquote Balkan death, as Eppinger put it. Hitler was disconsolate at the loss of his stabilizing influence in Bulgaria. He ordered a powerful delegation to attend the state funeral. His instincts told him that the House of Savoy lay behind the murder. Was it not suspicious that Princess Mafalda, the king's sister-in-law and daughter of the King of Italy, wife of Prince Philip of Hesse, and the, quote, blackest carrion in the Italian royal house, unquote, as Hitler luridly described her, had spent some weeks in Sofia quite recently? From the Forschungsamt, he learned that Prince Philip had recently dictated groups of ciphers over the telephone to Mafalda, evidently employing some private code. To arrest him, however, would be to alarm the Italian monarchy too soon. So Hitler invited the prince to be his guest at headquarters, treated him with continued hospitality, and told his guards not to let him out again. On the evening of August 21st, Hitler invited his staff movie cameraman, Lieutenant Walter Frenz, whose birthday it was, to take supper with him. Frenz had just returned from another tour of the Atlantic Wall project, and he mentioned that several guerrilla bomb incidents had marred his visit to Denmark. Hitler ordered General Jodl to obtain daily reports to this, quote, guerrilla warfare, unquote, in the future. A few days later, alarmed by the reports, the OKW commander, General von Hanneken, was now submitting, Hitler ordered Ribbon. A few days later, alarmed by the reports the OKW commander, General von Hanneken, was now submitting, Hitler ordered Ribbentrop to issue an ultimatum to the Danish government. It was to declare a state of emergency and introduce draconian measures against guerrilla activities. As Hitler evidently anticipated, the ultimatum was rejected, and the Danish forces were disarmed early on August 29th, almost without a shot being fired. The king and crown prince were placed under house arrest, and the Danish navy was surrendered to Admiral Dönitz. Hitler now ordered Himmler to deport all Jews from Denmark. Several thousand escaped to Sweden, but 477 were rounded up and taken to the Theresienstadt concentration camp in October. Hitler's trust in Himmler and the SS was now absolute. Germany would never forget the heroism of the Waffen-SS divisions, which had recaptured Kharkov in March and dispelled the gloom of Stalingrad. Himmler's pocket diary shows him attending Hitler's conferences with increasing regularity. Sometimes Hitler phoned him in person. They lunched together two or three times a week, or dined far into the night. Hitler did not doubt the precariousness of his position. Events in Italy had sparked off a mood of defeatism in Germany. Himmler, in a secret January 1944 speech, epitomized the mood thus, quote, "So, a duce can be arrested. Very interesting. And many a rash mind poses the question, why not here in Germany too? Then we'll be rid of the Nazis. We can make peace with the British. The British will guarantee Germany against Russia, and everything will be all right," end quote. Throughout August 1943, the Reichsfuhrer and Gestapo rounded up German dissidents. The more able-bodied, quote, not more than 150 in all, Himmler, end quote, Himmler boasted, were put to the guillotine. The most dangerous group was, however, left at large. In March 1943, Himmler had warned Hitler that certain nuclei of ex-ministers and dismissed army generals were beginning to plot a coup d'etat. There was General Franz Halder, whom he codenamed Reservist, quote, as he's holding himself in reserve to take over the German army, end quote, Himmler sneered in August 1944. And he was also keeping watch on the former finance minister, Johannes Poppitz, under the code name Baroque. For months, Poppitz had been trying to establish contact with Himmler through an intermediary, a lawyer called Karl Langbein. The lawyer explained to the crafty Reichsfuhrer that the war must be stopped, peace made with Britain, and the Fuhrer pensioned off. Himmler at once told Hitler, quote, I'll bump him off right now. What cheek! End quote, meaning Poppitz. But Hitler laughed, quote, no, not that. Hear him out first. Send for him. And if in that conversation he puts his cards straight on the table, then you can arrest him. End quote. Himmler sent for Poppitz 3 days later and secretly recorded the entire conversation on magnetic wire. Gestapo officials stood by to arrest the man, but Poppitz would not be lured out of his reserve, and he left the building a free man. Once Frick had proposed to Hitler setting up a Reich Senate of academics and clergy as a supreme constitutional body, the very image, Hitler now remarked, of the fascist Grand Council had just proven Mussolini's undoing. Hitler appointed Frick protector of Bohemia and Moravia in Neurath's place. At the same time, he upgraded Karl Hermann Frank's powers as deputy protector in Prague, so as to vest absolute authority in him. As Goering later disarmingly put it, quote, it became increasingly clear that the Führer was turning more and more to the exponents of brute force, end quote. Jodl's account of Rommel's Bologna meeting of August 15th had convinced Hitler that Italy was about to defect. He instructed Rommel that if necessary, he was to, quote, make ruthless use of his weaponry to get his way, end quote. Things were already getting ugly. On August 17th, an Italian general forced a German unit at gunpoint to hand over American parachutists they had taken prisoner in northern Italy. Late the next day, Hitler issued a further secret directive to the Southern Front, beginning thus, quote, in some form or other, it is expected that Italy will surrender to the enemy pressure sooner or later, end quote. He ordered Vittinghoff's 10th Army to move three mechanized divisions to the coastal area most in danger of invasion, the stretch between Naples and Salerno. The Italians had now assembled nearly seven divisions around Rome, leaving only one division to fend all Apulia. Two formidable Allied convoys were sighted by agents, passing eastward through the Strait of Gibraltar. One was reported laden with 70,000 troops and their equipment. Hitler deduced that the enemy must be about to invade the continental mainland. The Admiralty agreed. Things were coming to a head. Early on August 26th, Himmler alerted Hitler to an agent's urgent message from Rome. Quote, Badoglio has asked Britain for an armistice, regardless of conditions. The British have promised to reply by Saturday, August 28th, 1943, and want to send in a strong convoy meantime with the most up-to-date weapons to enable temporary resistance to be offered to German troops, end quote. Meanwhile, there were fresh clashes between the Italians and Rommel's troops in the north, as the latter now entered Slovenia with Tiger tank regiments. Late on August 30th, the OKW issued a revised directive for Axis under which Italy was to be occupied by German forces. When that code word was issued, the Germans were to disarm the Italians, seize their weapons, and prepare a retreat northward to Rome. Northern Italy was to be pacified and a fascist government restored. The retreating troops were to burn and destroy, quote, as though on enemy soil, end quote. Corsica was to be held. Field Marshal Weichs could assume command of the entire southeastern front, the Balkans. All this while the Italian generals and government were expressing pained surprise that Hitler showed so little faith in their loyalty to the Axis cause. Hitler had replaced his two credulous diplomats in Rome, Mackensen and Rintelen, with two from a more skeptical school, Ambassador Rudolf Rahn and Colonel Rudolf Toussaint. Their dispatches spoke in more realistic language about the future. From late September 2nd on, it was plain that an invasion of southern Italy was imminent. At 6 a.m. the next day, 100 landing craft, disgorged two divisions of the British 8th Army on the southernmost point of the peninsula, at Reggio di Calabria. The Italians imposed a virtual news blackout and offered little resistance themselves. In the afternoon, a British message was decoded, quote, 600 prisoners taken, including two colonels, no minefields, no Germans, civilians are friendly, end quote. The German naval commander in Italy, Admiral Wilhelm Mensen-Bulken, reported that day that Badoglio's government could be trusted. The report blandly assured Hitler, quote, they are stifling anything redolent of peace demonstrations, end quote. The Italian Navy in particular had promised him that there could be no question of, quote, a repetition of Scapa Flow or Toulon, end quote, with their fleet. Hitler marveled at the admiral's gullibility. When Romania's Marshal Antonescu visited that day, Hitler told him he was convinced that the King of Italy was now dealing with the enemy. The Führer begged Antonescu to be on guard against poisoning attempts and repeated this same warning to Rommel on September 4th, quote, I am to have an audience of the Italian king shortly, recorded the field marshal. The Führer has forbidden me to eat anything there, out of concern for my health, end quote. In his diary that day, Rommel entered, quote, the Führer makes a tranquil, confident impression. He wants to send me to see the King of Italy soon. He agrees to my Italian campaign plan, which envisages a defense along the coastline, despite Jodl's objections, which don't hold water in a modern war. The Führer considers it still too early for the countries of Europe to unite. 8:30 p.m., dinner with the Führer, previously with Jodl. Führer advises me to take care when I see the king, end quote. It was about this time that after one war conference, Hitler was observed sketching with his colored pencils a new flag for a Republican Italy. Quote, the first one to lose his nerve will lose the war as well, end quote, Hitler had said to Antonescu. During August, while Hitler was reinforcing his strength in the Mediterranean, Stalin had cleverly exploited the strategic impasse to mount a series of attacks all along the Eastern Front. Manstein repeatedly warned that Stalin's objective was to cut off his own army group south and Kleist's army group A in the Crimea and Kuban bridgehead, and he demanded that either at least 12 new divisions be provided him to reinforce his northern flank, or that Hitler permit him to withdraw from the coal-bearing Donetsk region. This would shorten his front by one-third and thus provide him with the reserves he needed. At 7 a.m. on August 27th, Hitler flew down to his old headquarters in the Ukraine. Manstein told him that without reinforcements, he could not prevent the Russians from sooner or later breaking through the Dnieper River. Hitler stayed 5 hours, listened calmly, promised to transfer divisions to Manstein from Kluge's Army Group Center and from Army Group North. Then he flew back to East Prussia. His promise to Manstein was broken within one day, for Kluge had his own enemy breakthrough to contend with. He arrived at Hitler's headquarters the next day and talked the Führer out of further weakening Army Group Center. While Hitler hesitated, Stalin did not. On the Sea of Azov, General Hullett's new 6th Army was breached and a corps briefly encircled. On his own responsibility, Manstein told Hullett to fall back, the first irrevocable step toward abandoning the rich Donets Basin. Hitler had no choice but to allow Manstein to withdraw. He ordered him to destroy anything of value to the enemy first. This decision was announced to Manstein at the Wolf's Lair on September 3rd. The next day, Hitler also authorized with the withdrawal of the 17th Army from the Kuban bridgehead across the Strait of Kerch. As recently as June, engineers had put into service an overhead cable railway across the 4-mile-wide strait. It was capable of transporting 1,000 tons of supplies a day from the Crimea to the bridgehead. For many months, Stalin had confronted the bridgehead with over 50 divisions, but now he was no longer impressed by Hitler's ability to mount a new offensive and was deploying them elsewhere. Liquidating the bridgehead would release nearly 4 divisions. Hitler ordered Kleist to speed up the fortification of Crimea. How he longed for the autumn rains to return. Thus, the 8th of December, 1943 arrived. A hot and airless day. Hitler had slept only 4 hours. He was awakened at 5:45 a.m. because he had to fly down to Zaporizhzhia to see Manstein again. After 55 Russian divisions were now confronting his... Over 55 Russian divisions were now confronting his forces. The Russians had again pierced the 6th Army, and at the frail weld between Manstein and Kluge's army groups, the dam had finally burst and the enemy was pouring westward toward Kiev and the middle reaches of the Dnieper. Here in the Ukraine, an inexplicable restlessness gnawed at Hitler. Was it Italy? On the 7th, he had suggested unraveling the tangled Italian web, quote, by brute force, unquote. Here, at least, he could take the initiative by putting a blunt ultimatum to Badoglio. Either provide a satisfactory explanation for his machinations, or face the immediate consequences. The ultimatum was being drafted at this moment. Now, after barely 19 minutes at Manstein's headquarters, Hitler could stand the uncertainty no longer. He was airborne at 12:45 p.m., leaving Russian soil for what was to prove the last time, and was back at the Wolf's Lair in conference by 5. Again, his sixth sense had served him well. He found that 2 hours earlier, an SS teletype had arrived, a 4-day-old report by an agent on the Italian air staff. The man had just overheard Ambrosio's Commando Supremo secretly telephoning this message to the Air Force. Quote, Italian peace proposals by and large accepted by the British. We are trying to iron out difficulties raised by Americans. End quote. Despite this, the King of Italy had just assured Ambassador Ron that his country would fight on, and Badoglio had told the envoy the same. Quote, Germany has still to learn what an Italian general's word of honor means, end quote. Worn out by events, Hitler dozed in his room for half an hour. Almost at once he was awakened. The BBC had just announced Italy's, quote, unconditional surrender, unquote. Shortly afterward, General Eisenhower broadcast a proclamation from Algiers Radio, quote, The armistice was signed by my representative and representatives of Marshal Badoglio and takes force immediately, end quote. Jodl put in a direct phone call to his generals in Rome. Both were at the very moment seeing General Roata, and the army's chief of staff was hotly refuting the Allied broadcasts as wicked libels on the honor of Italy. Consternation gripped Hitler's staff, as Roata's denial still robbed him of the freedom to issue the code word Axis. Jodl drafted a monition alerting all commands, but before it could be teletyped, Ribbentrop learned from Rome that at 7:15 p.m., Badoglio had confessed that Italy had indeed surrendered. The OKW acted like lightning. At 7:50 p.m., Jodl's adjutant telephoned the code word to the south. As Jodl later pointed out, even the two hours advance notice given by the BBC had given Germany some opportunity to issue orders before the Italians could react. It was unlikely that the Italian fleet could be prevented from escaping. At 8:45 p.m., Admiral Cunningham was heard radioing the Italian ships to run for the nearest Allied haven. The German Admiralty commented, quote, The consequences of this vile act of treachery, unique in military history, will be very different from what Italy has hoped. The countryside will become a battlefield between the betrayed allies of yesterday and the ruthless conquerors of today, end quote. Alas, no record of Hitler's conversations that evening remains. Long after dawn, the group disbanded. As Prince Philip of Hesse, son-in-law of the King of Italy, went out, the chief of Hitler's police bodyguard arrested him. He was consigned that same night to the Gestapo at Königsberg, and he remained in a concentration camp until the war was over. Relieved that the clouds of uncertainty had been dispelled, Hitler fell into bed at 5 a.m. to snatch 5 hours' rest after a working day of 23. He alone had steadfastly predicted this treachery. Why is he so competent, and everyone else so stupid?